In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And today's episode is going to be similar to one we've had before, our 25th episode. We're going to just have a conversation about a few things. This is inspired by me arriving here today and noticing and commenting on the coffee cup that Mike is using to drink his coffee in.
Yep.
Mike is using just one of the normal, it looks like the coffee cup that came with the plates and bowls and stuff from your house.
Yeah, these were wedding gifts. I kind of tend to gravitate towards these. They're
okay,
nice.
Because they're wedding gifts?
Yeah, I just like them.
And it's a decent shape, decent size coffee mug. But I commented on the fact that he has a plethora, nice word.
Ooh, nice.
Of coffee mugs that he could drink from that are all kinds of different. I mean, you've heard him obviously talk about his love of Batman.
And oh, yeah.
All things DC. I think I even got him recently a Star Trek one.
You got us a few of them, actually.
Yeah.
You got us the cool, like, 60s style, like, margarita glasses.
Those are
awesome.
Neat. Yeah.
Little martini glasses, as they are.
Great finds at the Goodwill.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And
I'm always looking for stuff like that. This stuff's fantastic.
I grabbed the Star Trek stuff because I have enough friends that are Star Trek fans. I don't keep them for myself. I do have, I don't even know if I told you, I do have two Search for Spock pint glasses.
Cool.
That are actually original Search for Spock ones. Got mm-hmm. Spock on them. Got quotes and stuff from the movie or stuff.
Nice.
About the movie. But those are already promised to somebody else. So
I can understand that. That's okay
for you.
But it's all good. I'm starting to run out of room for my collectible glasses. I've got just up the wazoo.
I've made so much more
cups.
Room for that. At some point, you haven't been to the house that we've lived in for the last couple of years, just schedules and whatnot.
Yeah.
At some point, I got to get you up there so I can show you the loft.
Cool.
Because the loft is like, it's, there could be more Star Wars heaven to it if I had more money to buy more Star Wars stuff.
But is it the same, it's not the same house that I went to.
For like the football game?
The
Super Bowl? No.
Years ago.
No,
no,
different house.
New house? Okay.
Different house. This loft is actually, at that old place, the loft was our bedroom for a while, and then it became kind of a playroom for the kids.
Oh, nice.
This loft is my room.
Oh, cool.
I don't like your game room.
I've seen a picture or two.
It's my game room / music room / I showed you a picture. In fact, one of the pictures on the Facebook for us is my former lightsaber collection. I have more.
Your man balcony.
I don't like that kind of terminology because women are more than welcome. Well, at least my wife is more than welcome. Other women
are really? Wait, that's like an exclusivity thing? I just figured that's the thing full of all the things that you like.
Maybe it's my personal interpretation. The terms like man cave or any man,
I could have misinterpreted it. I have no idea.
To me, I interpret that as being exclusivity type thing. Women aren't allowed.
Okay,
there.
That makes sense. I mean, I can understand it, but at the same time, it's just like.
Then again, my mind skews that way. So anytime I hear things like that, I start feeling that way. But anyway, I was commenting on the fact that he has all these other wonderful mugs that he could use, and he uses kind of the. Again, it has sentimental value, but it's
like
just kind
the
of
plainest mug
planet.
That we have. It is the plainest mug we have. There's generic mugs that have more color to them than what I'm using. Yeah. It's a black coffee mug on the outside
and his
red on the inside. That's it.
Maroon red, close enough.
Yeah.
But his comment then back to me was that when we have the capability to, which this has always been an intention and it will be something we're working towards in the future,
mm-hmm.
when we have the capability to be filming our episodes and putting out filmed versions of the episodes, he says he'll go through the various cups. And I'll be like, okay. I was like, okay, this is a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
But you need to use a different cup for each episode. He's like, all right. So, but I'm going to use the same cup for each episode. He goes, okay. And he had a look about him like, why would you do that? This is a little bit of a weird thing.
I am a little confused.
But then I explained to him. And this is kind of this is the reason why I just wanted to have a conversation, because I find that sometimes things come up in our conversations that are just amusing things that are fun little tidbits about us and maybe people connect to them. I will be using the exact same cup because that's what I do in real life. I have literally one cup that I drink coffee out of. And I don't drink anything else out of it.
Oh, okay.
And I make my cup of coffee in it every single day. I have another one of these style of mugs, the Tervis style mugs. They're the insulated ones, really nice insulated ones. You find
mm-hmm.
them at like Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yeah.
I have another one that's a 49er one. mm-hmm. for my football love.
Yeah.
That one I drink smoothies or like when I've tried to lose weight and not been successful using things like Slim Fast and stuff like that, I'll drink a shake out of those. That's okay. the only thing I use that mug for.
Okay.
I have another mug that I use to drink hot tea because I love drinking hot tea.
Okay. Cool.
And now this is going to get funny. Because when I talk about drinking hot tea, I talk about drinking like black tea, just normal black tea with cream and sugar in it, which is a little bit weird for some people,
mm-hmm.
but it's the way I like to do it. If I'm drinking an herbal tea, like a peppermint tea or any kind of flavored tea,
mm-hmm.
I have another mug for that.
Okay.
I have four glasses that I drink all my other liquids out of, iced tea, water, stuff like that. I rotate through these four as they get dirty. Nobody else in the house is allowed to touch these glasses. They are only my glasses.
I am definitely not like this. I have glasses. Like I have pint glasses for beer. I have whiskey glasses for whiskeys or cocktails. I have my coffee cups, but I have a variety of each. And that's pretty much it.
I have one pint glass that's my pint glass.
I've got my travel cups for coffee. I don't even really have a smoothie cup or anything like that.
In fact, my pint glass says...
I'll just throw that into a pint glass.
My pint glass says, F off, it's my birthday. And it's the only
one
I drink out
of. Do you only use it on your birthday?
No, that's the only one I drink out of.
Typically. Out of all of the other things that you just told me, that should be like what happens with that
cup. I know,
cup.
But... I have a glass that I drink whiskey out of, one specific one that I like to drink whiskey out of. It's got a nice base to it.
Nice.
As far as other mixed drinks, those ones I'm not so worried about because I don't do those drinks as often. So I have a couple of different glasses that I'll use for that.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, if I'm pouring a beer into a pint glass, like if I have a Guinness or something,
mm-hmm.
and I'm pouring it into a pint glass, that's my F off. It's my birthday glass. So okay. I don't want to use. I have a cereal bowl that is my cereal bowl. That nobody else is allowed to use.
I just have a collection of bowls.
I have a set of four Oreo ice cream bowls that the wife and I got in a set for one of our like first Christmases. One of my family members it was a really nice moment because it was our first Christmas. Her and I were together. I think it was right the day after I decided I was going to ask her to marry me.
Mm-hmm.
That I decided I wanted to marry her, and we were at this family member's house for. Christmas or before Christmas, picking up Christmas gifts.
Okay.
And this family member had given us a joint gift, and it was this Oreo cookie set. In fact, you may or may not even remember having seen the Oreo bowls at some point or another because you lived with us after that point in time.
I don't That's remember fine. Seeing those.
But there's a few people who would know, one sadly who's no longer with us, who would know that those bowls. You're only allowed to eat ice cream out of those bowls. I won't let people eat anything else. If people use them for any other purpose, I get really, really mad.
Oh, okay.
Will you not eat
ice cream out of any other bowls and only those bowls specifically?
I typically only want to eat ice cream out of those bowls. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I get it.
Those are my ice cream bowls, and they're supposed to have ice cream in them.
I could understand that. I mean, that's not the way I roll, but I can understand
it. I have two forks in the silverware drawer
uh-huh.
that – the wife and I fight over because we both – there are two forks that aren't a part of our set.
Okay.
They're just two random forks that somehow or another became part of our set of silverware, but they're not part of – we have two sets of silverware that got combined together at one point.
Uh-huh.
These two are not part of either one of those sets. They're just two separate forks that somehow became part of our silverware drawer. We fight over these two forks because we only want to eat with these two forks. I can't explain why. It's just I love those two forks. She loves those two forks.
I've got a certain type of fork here. I think I've only got one or two left. It's one of the forks that my parents gave me like way back when I first moved out.
Okay.
And I grew up with this silverware.
Yeah, so it's like
so, and it's got a good like solid round handle on it. Like for some reason, like I don't like the flat the flat decorative type looking cheap forks that you get. Like this thing is like a solid, like it's almost like a fork with a knife handle on it. It's
nice.
Just, yeah, it's decent. It's a good grip. I don't know why I really like using that fork at any point in time. I don't care what I'm eating. That's the type of fork I like to use. I will use other forks. It's not like I have a thing, but if that's the fork in the drawer, or if that fork is in the drawer, that's the fork I'm using.
No, these two forks I'm talking about, there are times that I will clean the forks just so that I can use that
fork. I can understand where you're coming from with that.
It's like my coffee pot at home. The only other person that's even allowed to touch my coffee pot at home is my wife. Nobody else is allowed to touch it.
Okay.
And this is a thing about
me. My dogs aren't allowed to touch my coffee pot either, so I can, that makes sense.
If your dogs touch your coffee pot, that's an interesting thing. I would give them credit for that. I'd actually be proud of them for that. Because just so people know, his dogs are very small and his counter is much higher than them.
Yeah. We've got one dog that may be capable of jumping on top of that counter, possibly two, but they are definitely not interested in doing it.
Yeah. No, it's just, I have other adults that live in the house. So luckily none of them are big coffee drinkers. Well, the one that is a big coffee drinker has her own coffee stuff that she takes care of. But what I'm trying to illustrate is I have done this kind of as a mental exercise for myself, and I realize that I am a very possessive and anal person when it comes to the things that are my things. I typically don't like people to mess with the things that I've identified as mine, and I know why. And this will be interesting because I can say why you probably don't have this problem.
Okay.
Your siblings.
Yes.
What are your age differences?
Pretty I would close? Say relative. No.
What's the closest to you age-wise as far as number of years?
Well, okay. So technically my closest sibling is my stepsister, and she's born in the same year as I was.
Okay. And were you raised in the same household?
Sort of. I had a split household.
Yeah, kind so you
of
spent some time with her in a household.
Yeah, a little bit, but it wasn't a large amount of time. Okay. And I never went out and lived with my dad for an extended period of time, except for maybe during. I think it was like a year and a half. I was in middle school ish, okay, give or take. So but then, she wasn't living there. So she was living with her dad. So the next sibling that I lived with, the one that I consider a sibling household, we're like 4 years apart.
Okay, see, and that's the key. 4 years, you were still young when that one was born.
I would
say,
yes.
So you can't, can you say that you really remember much of a life without that one being around, even as, you know, as, at least as a baby?
No, okay. I think I understand where you're coming from with this.
I have older brothers, but they lived with their mother.
Yeah.
And they only came to visit us during the summertime. So it was almost more like a relationship between cousins. Mm-hmm. As much as I love my brothers, and I do, and they are my brothers, the way the relationship worked, because we didn't see each other that much, the two of them were very close because they lived in the same household.
Right.
They were only 2 years apart, and a half years apart. They were very, very close with each other.
Okay.
And they still, to some extent, have closeness with each other. They communicate on a regular basis. One lives in the middle of the U.S. The other one lives in California.
Okay.
And so they still communicate with each other. And they still have that closeness. My two sisters are much younger than me. There's a 7.5-year gap between my younger older brother and my oldest younger sister. So for 7.5 years, in a sense, I was an only child.
Oh, okay. See, yeah, I was only four. So
you would be if a psychologist was like analyzing you.
Okay.
They'd analyze you as maybe oldest child.
Yeah.
I would be analyzed as an only child, even though I had older brothers and younger sisters, because of the amount of time that I was by myself living.
Yeah.
I had already gone through so much of the child development stuff.
You have a solid memory of being an only child.
Yes.
I have a solid memory of
being the only one there. And as a result, I think that's why I am so possessive over my objects. These are my things. Because when I was growing up, I had glasses and stuff that were mine. My parents didn't touch them because they had their own crap.
Right.
I didn't have siblings. There was stuff you weren't
allowed to have. You had stuff that was exclusive to you. That's the way you learned how to live as a child.
And I didn't have to share anything with siblings because they weren't around. That's interesting,
man. I never thought about that. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And it's something that I hold on to in certain things. Like I have my seat on the couch, and I really am uncomfortable when anybody else is sitting on my seat in the couch.
Okay.
Most people.
That makes sense.
I try to hold it in when we're having like family functions and realize that I don't need to sit in the couch. I'm usually up doing things. I'm making food. I'm taking care of kids. I'm wrangling things, whatever. So other people are going to sit in my seat. I will admit I do try to choose who sits in my seat based on who I don't mind sitting there and me having to sit there afterwards.
Yeah.
Because that is an issue for me, but it's my issue. It's not theirs.
Right.
And I realize that it's my issue. And it's just kind of, it's amusing how something as simple as your coffee mug choice for the day and that little conversation starts a much bigger conversation about things.
Right.
And that's my impetus for today, just having a conversation. It's so fun what little tiny tidbits will bring up.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I never really thought of that. It's never an experience I had. I never had that dynamic.
You remember when
I dealt with that with that. That was, I remembered that was quite a bit of a topic of contest when I was living with other roommates that had a completely different upbringing.
Yes.
And that, I mean, I'm pretty sure that anybody would run into that anybody that would have had my experience would run into something like that with a roommate situation, because financially it's pretty much impossible to do. But I can totally understand why that brings a lot to me, because it's something I never really thought about, but I can totally understand why I had certain people that I lived with that were specifically like that.
Yeah.
That even grew up in family households, but that's what they were taught. See, if you're taught that as a kid, then your younger sisters would also have been taught that.
Well, no, actually my sisters were dealt with in a whole different way.
Really?
Well, that's part of the reason why a psychologist would be analyzing us in a different fashion. My sister, the older of my two younger sisters would be analyzed as an oldest child, not a younger child. And then the younger sister would be analyzed as the youngest child, if they were being psychoanalyzed, because the household had shifted enough by the time they started coming into formative years,
right,
that it would have made, it was enough of a difference in the way that things happened.
And so the two of them learned to live together in a different environment than you learned.
And in many ways they share a closeness that I'll never share with any of them, which is a good thing for both of them. It's good to have that closeness.
Totally.
I'm still more distant in some ways than, you know, to both sets of siblings, which again, I want to reiterate, because I know at least one of my younger sisters does listen to this.
Yeah.
I still love both of you. You are still my sisters, but you and I, we've had this conversation. You guys got to be a lot closer because of the age difference, and I still have a little bit of distance. I'm the older brother that's, you know, not connected in the same way.
Yeah, totally.
And it was a different feel to the household when you know, I grew up and moved out. Everything did have a shift to it, and they also, keep in mind, part of that is they had to share a room for many years. We lived in a house that was only a 3-bedroom house. So the older of the two sisters was chomping at the bit for me to move out, because she wanted her own room, and I was getting the, I don't know if you remember, because I think you were a part of, no, you weren't a part. I didn't know you yet when I first moved out of the house. I was getting the last of my stuff out of the bedroom, and she was already moving her stuff into the bedroom.
Wow.
Because she was ready to go. She was ready to get her own room. She'd never had her own room.
Or, yeah.
Rephrase. She didn't remember having her own room. She had her own room when she was very small.
Yeah.
She really didn't remember it. So she had shared a room with her sister for so many years.
Yeah.
That she was like, I think it was 5-6 years that she had shared a room with her sister. And that was through most of her growing up. So she was like, I'm ready. I want my room.
Yeah.
I want my own room.
I get it.
And I do have an understanding of it too. I basically had my own room my entire life. For a short period of time, I had to share half of my room with my sister's toys when we lived in a very small place. But they slept in the living room. They didn't sleep in the bedroom. We tried having them sleep in the bedroom for a short time, and they were still young enough that they were in the nightlight phase of life.
Oh, and it was bugging you.
I could not sleep with the light on.
I get it.
Couldn't deal with that. So, you know, we had those instances happen, but having to share a room, that made a big difference. My wife is a very good example. She never in her entire life, sorry, for maybe 1 year of her entire life, she had a room of her own. She always had to share her space with somebody. She has a sister that is a year or two younger than her, and then her much younger sisters.
Okay.
But the one that was only, you know, a year or two younger than her, they shared a room forever. Basically, in the entire time she lived with whatever family she lived with, they were sharing a room. And then when the even younger ones came along, the one that lives with us currently, the sister-in-law that lives with us, as a baby, she slept with in the same bed with my wife.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, she has always had that interconnectivity of having people around, mm-hmm. having people. Hell, it was a month of when her and I first met, trying to sleep in the same bed at night.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I'm talking just the sleeping portion. I was in fits trying to be able to sleep with somebody even in the same room as me.
Whoa.
Much less in the same bed as me. It drives me nuts.
Huh.
And to this day, it's a little joke that we kind of talk about. She has to wait until I am fully asleep to touch me at all while we're in bed. Like normally couples will try to cuddle or something, or
yeah.
hand on you or something like that, leg over you, something like that. Uh-huh. She cannot touch me until we're fully asleep. Because I will move out of the way. I can't deal with it.
Wow.
I can't stand that happening.
Is it just overwhelming feeling? Like, is it just constricting, maybe?
I just need some isolation. When I'm going to sleep, I need to be isolated. It's like the only time that, I think it's probably the only time I maybe let my guard down.
Okay.
And so I need that isolation to be able to get comfortable enough to be okay going to sleep. I used to be horrible when we'd have sleepovers as a kid. I'd go to people's houses for sleepovers. I maybe went to 3 or 4, and I couldn't stand it because I had to wait till everybody else went to sleep before I felt comfortable going to sleep.
Right.
And then I was awake before anybody else was. So you get those sleepovers that go to like 2 o'clock in the morning, and people start getting up at like 6 because their mental clock is already trained
yeah.
to get up that early.
Yeah.
I got no sleep at those things.
Yep.
I was down in as many sodas as I could sneak from whatever family we were, you know, the party, because it just was too much for me. I couldn't deal with the anxiety of being around other people and trying to sleep at the same time.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. I guess I kind of developed that a little bit. I don't think that's really the case with socially, like throughout my 20s or anything like that. But I think I can say
when you moved in with us and were our roommate, mm-hmm. you'd go to sleep whenever you needed to, and you'd sleep for as long as you needed to. It didn't seem to bother you if anybody else was awake.
No, originally it was like that. Now I think it more so has to do with, like, because I deal with a lot of, I'm not like trying to like air out any dirty laundry or anything like that, but I deal with like a lot of stress. I'm spreading yeah. myself thin. I'm doing a lot of things. And, you know, I've got my 9 to 5, or well, I don't have a 9 to 5. I have my weekly gig, and then I also have my weekend gigs that I deal with, and then I have other extra work that I'm dealing with.
Like
so
this.
My mind is constantly processing.
So yours is
how
more
am I
going to
do the next thing?
Yeah, yours is more of a mind is just too busy.
Yeah,
kind of
it's
thing.
Constantly working. It's constantly trying to figure out the next step in what I'm trying to do. So
which is
sleep
to be under-
terribly most of the time, and I also am getting up early.
Well, and that's to be understood for somebody at your
really
point in life.
Yeah.
And you know, somebody at your point in life, somebody with the things that you have on you as demands, that's it's understandable. A kid who's 11 years old shouldn't have those issues.
No, that's
and
what
I
I'm
did.
Getting at.
I
yeah,
did.
I think there was just a, I mean, some people, you seem like somebody that, you seem like a somewhat, I would consider you to be a very empathic, analytical person.
Okay.
Wait
a minute. Are you talking about the are you trying to put me on that one test scale thing? I can't think of what they call
that
damn thing.
The personality test stuff. I've yeah. taken that,
you know, that
and I got two different results.
You know that
it's
thing
really
is
funny.
Completely bunk, right?
I got two different results.
It was just
on
made
it.
Up by two ladies who were mystery novel writers. Interestingly enough,
funny.
They just made it up. And then people started adopting it. But it's
yeah,
completely bunk and
it
means absolutely nothing. But anyway, go on.
I can see it. No, I'm just saying that just generally looking at your personality and responses like that, I think you're somebody that – well, first off, I already know you as somebody that's constantly analyzing the room, regardless
yes.
of what room you're in. You could be analyzing the feeling of an empty room or one that's full of people. It doesn't matter. You're constantly – noticing and processing and,
yeah.
and doing that kind of stuff.
I'm not oblivious to very much. I can
no,
say that.
But at the same time, on top of the analysis, you also tend to kind of tap into the feeling of a room a bit.
Yeah, I can see that. Thank you.
And so that
I take that as a compliment.
I tend to do that. I'm not very analytical when it comes down to what's going on because my mind is so scatterbrained that I can't sit
yeah.
there and analyze and go that. I can't do that, and I definitely can't keep a log of it. but I definitely feel a room when I walk in.
Yeah, I can say you're good at being able to understand and interpret the emotions of what's going on with people.
Yes,
but with one caveat: if you notice them,
I have to focus. I have to focus to do that.
That's probably the biggest thing.
I will be the first person to tell you that I have the worst ability to focus.
Mike is the guy that you want to practice your close up magic with.
Yeah.
Because it'll be a magic trick and he'll think it's amazing.
Yes. And I'll probably experience it for the first time about 10 times before I start catching on. I'm pretty gullible when it comes to stuff like that.
And I will think it's amazing if you pull it off right, just because I understand the manual dexterity that's necessary to pull it off right. I wish I could do the magic tricks. I know how many of them work mechanically.
Yeah.
My hands are just too stupid to do them. I have clumsy hands.
What's funny is that I can, a lot of the time I can do a bit of a, I've gotten better at this, short-term analysis in order to handle any types of situations. Okay. I tend to work well in an emergency situation because I stop and I start taking care of everything that's happening at once, because I'm able to tap into what everybody's feeling at that time. And I use that to try to help solve problems.
See, I've always seen that as a really good way to establish what a person's real personality is, what the true self is of a person is. And I mean, I'm not the first one to do this. The guy who wrote The Art of War. I always get his name wrong.
Sun Tzu?
Yeah. I pronounce it wrong because I'm bad.
Well, there's
at that.
Two. There's Sun Tzu and then there's Lao Tzu. And Lao Tzu was a philosopher and Sun Tzu was a general.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, either one of them may have made the. I think it's the guy who did The Art of War, though.
Uh-huh.
He said in there, I'm paraphrasing, I'm not getting it exactly right because I'm not trying to quote it, but you can live with a person for an entire life and you won't know who they are until you hold them over the edge of a volcano. Then you'll see who the real person is.
Yeah.
And the idea being when a person's in a crisis situation, that's when you really see who they are at their core. You see if there's somebody who can respond to things, who is proactive and gets things done, or somebody who is in the mode of panic and isn't proactive. Not either one of these things are good or bad or better than the other.
Yeah.
I think it's more important to know who the people around you are in those situations, so you know what needs to be done when you're in that crisis situation.
Yeah. Now, I'm one of those people that has the capability of being completely scatterbrained in those. In a crisis situation, I still don't necessarily believe that I have fully I've never fully realized what I would be like in that situation, or at least I don't feel like I have.
I've been in close to him a couple of times and stuff that's close enough.
I would probably say, I don't want to give myself, undue credit here. I have the ability to hyper-focus once somebody tells me to do something. If I know, I can take direction very quickly
and
concentrate on a specific job.
Example would be to throw it in a military understanding, just so that we can have rankings to understand things.
Yeah,
you would be good in a role of, say, like a lieutenant or captain, in that if your general could tell you, I need you to do this.
Yeah.
You could hyper focus and get that accomplished.
Yes.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
And within that, you could work autonomously getting that accomplished without having to go back to the general every 5 minutes to ask for help, because you've been given the rough idea of this needs to be accomplished. You can focus and get that done.
Yes.
And that's actually, it's good to know that about yourself, so that you know if you're ever in those situations, you know what you need to do.
Yeah.
And same for the people who can't handle crisis situations. If you know that you can't, again, this is not a bad thing, but if you know that you can't, if you know that that's your personality, that you can't handle those situations, when those situations come down, you go into panic mode, understand that and be ready to step aside for the people who excel at the crisis situations.
Yeah.
Who can take charge and get things done. Be ready to step aside and listen and do what needs to be so that the whole thing can go nowhere. Your personality role fits and fall into that.
Yep.
Unless obviously you want to change your personality role, if you want to try to do better at those things, but if you want to be yourself, just know where you fit in that and let the people who need to take charge.
Like
I said, I've been in a few of those situations. My father is an excellent example of somebody who's a very, very calm individual in the majority of his life, very calm, very gregarious.
Yeah.
He'll sit and have a conversation with anybody. Just really, really easygoing guy. But when there's a crisis situation, he will do something similar to yours. He'll kind of do some analysis. If you give him the task, he'll do the task.
Yep.
If nobody else is there to take charge, he will take charge and get things accomplished.
Yeah.
But he waits for somebody else to step up because it's not in his nature to take charge of everything. He only does it when it's necessary.
Yeah.
He's more of the understanding of put me where you need me to be and I will do what you need me to do to the best of my abilities.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like me.
I had him, you know, as an influence on me growing up and through a few crises. I mean, we did have to do a fire evacuation where the house was up in the hills, up in the woods,
mm-hmm.
and the fire came all the way to our property. I mean, burned all the way to our property edge. Mm-hmm. So our house was in danger. We had Cal Fire up on our house, hosing our house down, moving stuff around, making a fire break in our yard. They saved our house, literally.
Wow.
From being burnt in this fire. But I remember the evacuation process of doing that. And, I remember driving out one of the vehicles evacuating. It was me with, I think my sister's in the car driving out.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a scary thing, the glow in the sky. And I'm a kid, I'm 17 years old
yeah.
doing this.
Wow.
And even then I was focused. I did what I needed to do.
Yeah.
I knew what I needed to accomplish and I got it done.
Yep.
My mother was the one who would, in a crisis situation of any kind, she would completely take charge of everything.
Yeah.
And it was her shining moments.
I could totally completely see that.
Yeah. Her shining moments in life were her moments of taking charge and then her moments of being a exceptionally generous person at times. There were times when her generosity completely overflowed. But again, it's these moments of intense emotion that we really find out things about people.
Yeah, for sure, man.
All right, we're going to take a break now. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about something Mike doesn't know a whole lot about. We were supposed to have a full podcast about it, but it's not going to work out to get hooked up with our announcer friend
okay.
to do it. But we're going to have a little bit of discussion about that because it's also going to dovetail into how we relate to our parents.
Cool.
So we'll be back in a minute.
All right.
Hey, everyone. This is James from the Zenio Chronicles. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button at the bottom of this video. And be sure to click on the bell icon so you can be notified when we release new videos. And if you aren't watching on YouTube, please go to our page and do all that stuff anyway. Thanks for listening, and now back to the show. And we are back. So I said we were going to talk a little bit about some things that we were going to have a full podcast about with our announcer friend,
Scott.
What I'm talking about, of course, is Scott was going to come in, and yes, I'm using his name. He's our announcer,
yeah.
So his name can be used. Scott was going to come in and
say
talk
hi,
about,
Scott.
Yes, hi, Scott. Wait, I did that wrong. Anyway, Scott was going to come in to have a discussion about football with us.
Oh boy, okay, yeah, I'm definitely going to not be saying a lot here.
Scott and I share a love of football.
Yeah,
We both love the same team. There's multiple California teams now. We have a plethora of teams. Next year we'll lose one, thankfully, the one we all want to lose. sorry for the Raider fans. Actually, I'm not sorry for the Raider fans out there, except for the fact that they're Raider fans. Sorry,
he's
that
so
you have
bitter.
To be.
He's so There's bitter.
No, it's not bitterness. It's just knowing what's better.
This is why I would consider myself football neutral. I'm just not like a rabid fan. I grew up a Niner fan, which means that by association, I should be anti-Raider, but I'm really like not.
I mean, it is, but you understand that it is a thing.
And I'm sure that phrase just pissed off a lot of people that may be listening.
There are some people that might be a little angry about it, but here's the thing: you are self-actualized enough to know that you are just a kind of passing fan. You're not you're not a hardcore fan.
No.
You're not going around wearing 49er hats or 49er jackets or 49er shirts.
Look, if I went to a game and the Niners were featured there, I would be wearing a Niners. What not? You know what? Shut up.
Playing?
Yeah. Shut up. Shut up, James. But I would be. Yeah, I would wear the shirts. I'd wear the jerseys. I honestly want to get one so that I have one to wear two games if I ever go to another game, which I don't necessarily see happening too soon. But
I can understand.
I like
that.
Going.
So a quick question: if you got a jersey, whose jersey would you get?
I would go with the one I grew up. I would go with Montana.
Okay.
I would go with Montana. It would just show my age, but I would go with Montana.
That's okay. That's okay. At least you're going from the era that you really remember
watching.
That's
when, yeah, that's why I remember watching the games.
Which I understand. I can say that there's a jersey I want to get. of the ones. I think I own like 10 of them now. But the one that I really want to get at this point is for their current and just got injured yesterday, left tackle Joe Staley. At this point, he's the longest, he's the longest tenured 49er at this point. He's had his whole career with the Niners. I think he's in 10 or 11 seasons at this point. And his intention is to retire as a 49er, and he suffered a hairline fracture in his tibia. He should be out 6 to 8 weeks.
Dude, that sucks.
It does, because the team is actually doing fairly well this year for the first time.
That's what I heard. Aren't we like 2-0 or something like that?
2-0 and had a really good game on Sunday. But the reason I'm not necessarily wanting to talk specifically about the things of football, because it's still early in the season, and I'm not one that necessarily likes to brag and say my team is going to win all these different things. I'd like to see my team have a winning season. I'd like to see the Niners have a winning season for the first time in years.
Yeah.
But I'm not having any expectations for anything more than enjoyable games. And the last couple of games have been fairly enjoyable to watch. But I'm bringing it up because it's an interesting part of our culture here in America that sports seems to be, and not just football, but sports in general, seems to be the way that men can really connect with each other. This is kind of our medium of connection.
And is it?
It's
okay.
It's well for at least a generation of men.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I have found that especially men that are older than us, that are more in the Gen X group, or the baby boomers, for instance.
Yeah.
One of the best ways to be able to get them to be comfortable with more of the modern men, again, our generation,
right?
The millennials, what's the generation younger than the millennials now?
They're just calling them Gen Z at this point.
They're Zs at this point.
Yeah. They haven't created a name. Like, the millennials were Generation Y. I mean, I'm part of Gen Y, to be completely honest. But
you're more connected to Gen Y than you are to Gen X, but you're still a Zennial.
I know. And I do not deny that. I wear that badge proudly, sir. But they're called Gen Z right now. Millennials were called Gen Y until like 2008. 10
and that's when they started
throwing labels on them and insulting them, and that was
happened
with the punks too, right?
The thing is, I see that that's it seems
until they
to
wore
be,
like a badge of honor.
It seems to be the way that these more, because I would like to think that at least my experience has been from our generation, the Zennial generation, on through the millennials, now into the Gen Z, men have become more sensitive, more open to discussion, more open about their feelings and their thoughts about things. Any pleasantness that you get from them is not necessarily the false pleasantness of trying to be appropriate in public. It's actually, you know, connection between people. And they can connect over things that it used to be considered uncomfortable things for men to talk about. It's like, I feel comfortable talking to men of my own age and younger about being a parent, about dealing with the things of parenting, about how much joy I get from my kids.
Okay.
About how, you know, the little silly things that they do are just amazing things that make me feel great. The kids make me laugh. The kids make me cry. I feel comfortable saying these things to the younger generations.
I noticed I'm actually friends with a couple of younger parents, and they have that same... They're proud to talk about their kids.
And they don't mind saying things like, you know, this silly little thing that they do just makes me smile and feel so much joy.
Yeah, I see that a lot.
And they connect in a different way. Whereas men of some of the older generations, they were taught, as the way society was working, that men had to be more reserved, more closed in, keep some of that stuff more inside, not express it in the same way.
And that has essentially become dangerous
It became hard to connect. I mean, how many times do you... Let's think about a song that's been covered by at least, I'd say, 3 or 4 different artists. You can tell me how many more. The Cats in the Cradle song.
Oh, yeah.
How many artists have covered that thing? I know. I remember first hearing the Ugly Kid Joe version.
Yeah, but that's honestly my favorite version. I mean, don't get me wrong. The original Cats in the Cradle is fantastic. But the Ugly Kid Joe version, which I'm not even really that big of a fan of Ugly Kid Joe, but they nailed that song.
Well, that song touches and reaches so many people. You look at Field of Dreams and the idea that, you know, the best part of that movie for so many people was the fact that their dad was back to be able to play catch with.
Yeah.
Sorry for spoiling it. If you haven't seen that movie, either do it or don't. It's really long and boring. But anyway, point being, I remember that was one of the first movies that my dad admitted to. And my dad, by the way, sensitive guy, for especially for guys of his age and era.
Yeah.
But that was one of the first movies he admitted to making him tear up and cry, because there had been some strain with his relationship with his dad. And the funny thing is, that's not an abnormal thing. His case wasn't like some weird case where he had strain with his dad. He didn't have a connection with his dad like he wanted. This is something that is almost endemic of that era of people, of that era of men. They didn't have the relationships that they wanted. They couldn't connect. So one way that I found to connect with people of this era, men of this era, is by talking about sports. Because you could talk about you could talk about all these things you loved about sports. You could be passionate about it. You could show emotion about stuff with sports, because that's a manly thing to show emotion about.
Mm-hmm.
You're manly still with that. Because the whole idea was, and we've talked about it in other previous things. By the way, call back to a previous episode. I did get my my merce. I finally got it. I will have Mike take pictures of me today so that we can get them posted up. But I finally got my merce, and I'm very happy with it. But this goes back to this idea of this toxic masculinity, that this is sometimes the only way that people can communicate with each other is by doing it in these men can communicate with each other is by doing it in these masculine ways, talking about sports. You can always have that conversation. And the person who can't have the sports conversation, oh, he doesn't know about sports. Now, see.
Right.
And this shows some of the difference in how we've explained before. While we are both Xennials, we're both born in this microgeneration of Xennials.
Mm-hmm.
The beautiful thing about Xennials, and I think the beautiful thing about it, is the fact that we are so affected by both of the generations on either side of us. We have some Gen X traits. We have some millennial traits. We're like a blending of the two, where we're not necessarily stuck in one of those things. And it's so interesting to have you and me, 2 years separating us in age. But I definitely skew more Gen X because of the way my family composition was. My parents, especially my dad being a little bit older,
mm-hmm.
Having previously had children with another family.
Mm-hmm.
And you having parents that were younger, being a little bit younger, having the younger siblings is more of your connection to things. See the difference in it, in that I tapped into this language of sports as an understanding to reach that older group because it was necessary for me in what I was doing. It wasn't as necessary for you. You were born more into the time, and I'm not so much born more, but experienced more into the time where men could start having a little bit more of that sensitivity. They didn't have to learn sports to be manly. Moreover, they didn't have to have the same worry about having to be manly. They just had to be, which is kind of nice. I mean, I'm hoping we keep moving in that direction where people can just be as they are. But anyway, it is the start of football season, and this starts an interesting season for me and my dad. Now, my dad and I have a very good relationship. We talk a pretty decent amount. But football season is a whole different thing, because the only sport that him and I both really have a great love for, and it becomes a literally daily discussion about what's going on. Now, this started back in August when training camp stuff was happening and preseason games were happening, but it goes into full force once the season starts. And I'll be sitting watching all the games on Sunday, and all day long I'm getting text messages from my dad about all the different games happening, all the different things.
That's kind of cool.
If we're watching a 49er game, I know he's watching it wherever he's at, and if it goes 15 minutes and I haven't got a text from him, I wonder what the hell is wrong.
Huh.
But
I don't have that experience. And funny enough, my dad, I'm going to talk about both my fathers.
Please,
here. I've got my blood father and I have my stepfather. My stepfather, who would have, I guess, I don't know, when we're talking about, you know, kind of like man's man kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of his personality. He's worked construction his entire life.
Yeah.
You know, he was, his family is mainly from, a lot of his family is mainly from Arkansas. You know, just kind of, I wouldn't necessarily call him a good old boy, but he's not, you know, he's dialed back.
Yeah.
I didn't get a lot of, as far as, he's just a dialed back, pretty calm guy. But from what you would assume of everything else that he kind of may put out,
yeah,
you would assume he would be kind of into sports. Totally isn't into sports. His mind ain't even in it. He's just like, I got other crap to worry about.
Well, is he the one
he
that
just
worked,
never got into it.
Is he the one that worked in computers?
No.
No, he's not.
No.
Okay.
My blood father did.
Okay.
My father did. He was the one who was like super into sports and was a Niner fan. But dude, he was football, basketball, baseball. He watched all of them. He was super into them. And I just like he was the one who took me to baseball games. He was the one who, you know, was kind of pushing when I was into. He was the one more so that pushed me into being into Little League, and I was just super disinterested in it the whole time.
I actually wasn't allowed
as
to enter Little League.
You weren't allowed?
No, my mother wouldn't let me.
Oh.
She saw before it became a trending thing. She saw the toxicity of the parents. Before this became a trending issue, she saw the toxicity of the parents and the pressure the parents would put on the kids and how it made a toxic environment for the kids trying to play. And she wanted nothing to do with any of that.
Okay. That's pretty.
Yeah.
That's pretty hefty.
I honestly think part of it was she was afraid that she'd end up going to jail for beating the crap out of one of the parents when they said the wrong thing to their kid. Because as funny as my mom could be about some things, there were other things that she just would not abide.
Yeah.
And if your kid was trying to play a sport and your kid was, you know, having trouble struggling with it, and you were yelling at your kid about it, that would have been something my mother would have gone ballistic over and started screaming at you and, again, possibly physically assaulting you.
I get it. And it was funny because
Sorry, I'm just imagining. I'm imagining my mom doing this at this moment in time, and it's hilarious. She would have been climbing up stands and smacking people around because it's like, let your kid play the game, damn it. Just let your kid play. It's just a game. Let him play.
Yeah,
let
him have fun. I could see that. Parents get as rabid about their kids playing Little League, and I remembered seeing that as a kid. I remembered seeing it. It was just something I just was never comfortable with, didn't really like it.
Well, and my parents were actually very clear about that. My dad did play football in high school because, I mean, he went to high school in the 60s, so if you got a chance to play football, you went and tried to play football.
Yeah.
And he did play to an extent. But when I asked him about it as a kid, about whether he wanted me to play sports or anything, again, for the generation that he grew up in, he was a very progressive person. And he said to me, you know, son, I don't care what things you want to do. If you want to do them, I'm going to give you the support for doing them. But I'm not going to force you or push you into doing any of those type of things. Those are your choices. That's up to you. If you want to play baseball, I will give you the support that you need. If you want to play football, I'll give you the support that you need. But I'm not going to make you feel like you have to do any of those things for me. You're doing them for you. They have to be for you to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure he used different words, but that was basically the message that he gave across to me in that, is that he wasn't worried about me doing any of those things because he may have done them or because he may have wanted me to do them. He just wanted me to do what I felt like doing. I wanted to play football as a kid. I thought in ninth grade I'd have a chance to play football. I was 5'6" in ninth grade, and I was pretty quick. I was about as quick as everybody else around me at the schools that I was going to. And it's like, all right, I might have a chance maybe to make a JV team and see what I could do from there. And I'm only 13, and I'm 5'6", going to be 14. Maybe I'll have a couple more inches to grow. If I can get to at least 5'10", 6 foot, that'd be great. And there's people in my family that are that tall.
Right.
So if I can get there, that'd be great. Maybe I could do something for football. I never had the kind of skill I would ever have thought I would have gone professional. But maybe I could get a college scholarship playing on a college team somewhere. Not a good one, but at least a college team somewhere.
Yeah.
And I never got taller. And let me tell you something right now. In football, now, I was never very good at basketball. I kind of liked playing, but I was never very good at it. And I was only middling decent at baseball. About the only thing I could do interesting in baseball was I could bat switch.
Oh, cool.
I can't throw with my left hand for nothing. I mean, I can't throw any. I mean, you would laugh at me trying to throw even just like a a wiffle ball with my left hand. Hmm. It's hilarious. My left hand is almost completely useless. I can't even pick my nose properly with my left hand.
Okay.
But batting, for some reason, it wasn't a difficult thing for me to bat switch.
Interesting.
So I could bat right-handed, I could bat left-handed, but I couldn't do anything else with my left hand.
Huh.
Yeah. Weird. But I didn't like baseball. I always thought it was boring. I wasn't really a big fan of basketball. And the only way you're going to get good, you're going to get a chance being 5'6" in football, you better be the fastest guy out there. You could possibly be a running back at 5'6". I've seen it. There's a guy that played for the Niners, Dexter Carter. There's a guy that played for the New York Giants, Dave Meggett.
Hmm.
Those guys were about 5'6". Otherwise, if you ain't the fastest guy out there, you are not going to get anything at 5'6". Because you got to realize, the guys tackling you are like 6 foot, 6'2". Yeah, if you're trying to be a receiver, you're up against a defensive back. The shortest defensive back you're going to find is probably going to be 5'10". And so he's already got 4 inches on you.
Yeah.
You are not getting the ball. He's going to bat anything away. Unless you're able to run past him and break free, you're not getting it. But anyway, point being, football becomes the thing that my father and I end up talking about. And it's kind of nice because the upside is it's not the only part of our relationship. We have a very close relationship, and it's far beyond the football stuff. We have deep philosophical conversations. We have conversations about religion, politics, all the things we don't talk about on here. We have conversations about that. By the way, I've admitted that part of the reason we don't talk about those things is one of the two of us have some pretty extreme viewpoints when it comes to those things. If you were to sit and talk to my father, and I'll admit I'm the one with the extreme viewpoint.
I was going
to
say.
Mike is the more moderate person.
Go ahead and take
person.
A guess as to who.
Mike is by far the more moderate of the two of us. I'm the one that's a little more extreme in my views. But I would love for you to have a conversation about politics and that kind of stuff with my dad. Because while my views are extreme and reactionary.
Yeah.
They are definitely rooted in facts and things that are actually happening. My father has gone a little bit on the side of the occasional conspiracy theory stuff, which I think part of that is a function of, again, age and generation.
Yeah.
I think everybody from the boomer generation starts going conspiracy theory at some point or another, but it's a little fun to talk to him.
I can understand at one point, I can understand being sick of seeing so many things.
Well, when you have a reveal, for instance, my father was a young man in his early 20s during the Vietnam era. Okay, mm-hmm. He tried to enlist in the Air Force 4 different times in the hopes that being in the Air Force, he wouldn't have to go into direct combat and get drafted.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to enlist in the Air Force 4 different times. He failed 4 physicals. Now, this is back in the Vietnam era. He failed 4 physicals.
They were taking anybody at that point,
too. His blood pressure was so high, they were wondering why he was even still alive sitting there in the physical.
Whoa.
So they actually designated it so that he would never be drafted, never have to go into the military, because his health was not at a point where they felt comfortable putting him in. So he basically got a military exemption from any kind of military service. One of his best friends enlisted in the Air Force, which is one of the reasons why he was trying to go there. He was looking for a way to not be in combat because he didn't want to go fighting people for something that he wasn't necessarily sure about the reasons behind. Interestingly enough, one of his other best friends went and for some reason enlisted in the Marines instead of being drafted into the Army. The few stories he is told about being there makes me wonder why at that time frame you would have enlisted in the Marines instead of the Army. The Marines were given way less money than the Army was and way less supplies and way less everything. They were basically just dropped in a jungle and told to go do things and really didn't have much in the way of support. It was not very comfortable for Marines at that time period. Now, I understand. We have at least one or two friends that are mutual friends that are former Marines,
mm-hmm.
or in their mind still Marines, because there are some of them who never believe.
You're never an ex-Marine or a former Marine.
You're always a Marine.
You're always a Marine. And once you start, you don't stop.
And for them, it's a thing of pride to have been a Marine.
Totally.
Interestingly, I have found that I have actually found more people that are Marines or were serving in the Marines that were cross-dressers. Let me be clear about this. They were men still who identified as male, mm-hmm. who just liked to cross-dress occasionally.
Okay.
I found more of them as that were Marines than any other demographic group, and definitely any other military group. For some reason,
Truman?
Truman, like what? President Truman or
yeah.
Capote?
No, not Truman Capote. No, President Truman.
I don't think he was
wasn't
a Marine.
There a president that liked to cross dress or something like that?
Wasn't Truman.
I can't remember which one it was.
Truman was actually a pretty pretty kind of stiff stickler president.
I may just be remembering like off-color jokes and stuff.
Interesting
from
interesting
my childhood.
Maybe.
I can't remember. I can't think of where that came from.
I was going to say an interesting point about
I swear that there was a president that I could have swore that there was a president that there were rumors that he liked to cross-dress.
Maybe Ford.
Maybe that was it.
Oh, the Ford was a model.
He was?
Yeah, when he was younger, he was a model.
Oh.
Clothing model.
Cool.
Interesting note about Harry Truman. He met his wife in kindergarten and told her then that he was going to marry her one day. Married her and stayed married to her his entire
commitment.
Life.
Commitment.
Yeah, that's kind of who Truman was. Truman okay. was kind of a he was kind of a straight-laced kind of dude.
Yeah. Cool.
I mean, think about it. He made probably the biggest wartime decision ever. Twice.
Yeah, that's true.
Most people don't realize it was him who made
it.
You know
it took a lot of cojones to do that.
That
too.
Was something. But anyway. Point being.
We're talking about football, Dan.
My father was alive in the Vietnam era. And so to have years later and in our lifetimes,
yeah.
The reports unclassified and released to show that the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which is what was used as the reason for the United States to get involved publicly. Now they were involved in Vietnam prior to this, and we could one day, if you ever want to, have a discussion on the actual historical facts around Vietnam, not opinion based, but actual facts of some of the timeline things that happened, why things happened, based on the opinion or based on the facts. Again, whether it was right or wrong. Whole different story, but this is what led to these various things. The Gulf of Tonkin incident is what led to the United States being openly involved and openly sending troops, instating the draft. And that's where a Vietnamese or Viet Cong specifically boat apparently fired on a U.S. boat.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The Gulf of Tonkin incident was proven when these papers were released, CIA papers released,
mm-hmm.
that the Gulf of Tonkin incident was totally faked. It did not actually happen.
Whoa.
It was a completely faked incident used to basically get the public behind as much as they could. Get the public behind.
So this
going
was
to war.
this was a propaganda.
Yes, it
deal.
Was faked.
Like legit has been proven that the Gulf of Tonkin incident
yes.
was like
official,
we're not talking
official,
conspiracy
no,
theory.
No, this is official
stuff
government
here.
Papers stating that yes, we faked this incident
Whoa.
So that we could get into the war. We could have
Whoa.
Reason to get into the war. So the thing is, that's been a conspiracy theory for years, and then the papers come out to prove it. So people of his generation, I can understand why they get into conspiracy theories because
oh,
many
sense.
Of them have been proven.
I didn't know anything about that. I didn't know that
paper
I don't
came
remember,
out?
How long ago was it proven that the Tonkin incident was faked?
I think it came out somewhere between 10 and 20 years ago. I will do the research and find out for sure. So it's a more recent thing that's come out.
Because I remember hearing about it.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have been like I would have been out. That means I was out of high school before
yes.
it was proven false.
Well, here's the thing to understand. Your high school wouldn't have told you anyway.
No.
Because your high school is told by a group of people. I don't want to get too conspiracy theory sounding. Basically, the curriculum you're supposed to learn in high school when it comes to U.S. government and U.S. history.
Well, it's got
to
be government approved, essentially.
There is a board group that approves and sets up the guidelines of what you're to be taught in those things. And
Does that go by the wayside once you hit college?
Because
I remember hearing some off-color stuff from a few college professors when
it came
down to U.S. history.
College professors have much more leeway in what they are allowed to teach you.
Cool.
And they are not necessarily strictured by the rules of public schooling. If you are in private schooling and or in certain types of charter schooling, mm-hmm. sometimes they can get away with teaching you a little bit more, a little bit different, because their curriculum isn't set in the same way.
Interesting.
Now, there are many reasons why the curriculum is set that way, but that's a whole other discussion to get into.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I don't want to necessarily get into something like that, but I find it interesting.
Well, that's a discussion we could have at some point in the future.
Yeah,
talking about those type of things. But anyway, the important point that the original point that I was getting at was football as a medium, sports as a medium to be able to interact with people. And it's just this time of year, it always just strikes me again because, again, my relationship with my dad is great. He has a busy life,
mm-hmm.
and so we talk, but it's not necessarily super regular, but it's regular enough that we are in contact, and the contact is good contact all the time. There's mm-hmm. never any issues. We can talk about basically anything that we want to, and there's no problems there. Everything that ever is needed to be said between the two of us has been said. And this is a guy that every time I see him, he gives me a hug and he gives me a kiss. I mean, he's an affectionate cool. guy. He's a great example for me to have had of how to be a sensitive, affectionate man, a man that can discuss their thoughts and feelings in a time where it still wasn't completely acceptable when we were
right,
kids.
Right.
And as it's moved forward, as the world has moved forward, as our society has moved forward, and those things have become far more acceptable, he's the reason that I don't feel ashamed when I'm watching a movie, even in a packed movie theater, and I'm bawling my eyes out because it's affecting me emotionally. I'm not ashamed by that at all. I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Cool.
Most recent movie I saw in the theater, let's see, it was Godzilla, the Godzilla King of Monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few moments I almost teared up with that.
Really?
Because it was such good throwbacks and callbacks to the original Godzilla movies
mm-hmm.
that it was just like, this is beautiful. This is amazing. And then right before that, I had seen, like a couple weeks before that, I had seen Avengers Endgame.
Oh, yeah.
And
that was a roller coaster, apparently.
Have you finally seen it?
I haven't seen it, but, dude, the amount of the feels that were expressed all over Twitter and Facebook were pretty intense, I would say.
Yeah, there's a few moments there, a few specific moments, but it has been long enough. Can I say, at least comment on a few of them?
I know pretty much everything that happened in that damn film.
The death,
still ain't seen it.
The death of Black Widow?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yep, that moment. There in the final battle alone, I don't think I had a dry eye the entire time in the final battle.
Wow.
Because as it's happening, as it's unfolding, you're seeing all of these things that are like, it's just beautiful moments.
Hmm.
When Bro Thor powers up.
Bro Thor.
Well, there's a moment even before that when Bro Thor goes to Asgard and sees his mom, who's dead. His mom died in Thor Dark Planet.
Dark Planet.
Is that what it's called? Dark World? Dark World.
Dark World.
Yeah. In Thor Dark World, his mom dies.
Oh.
And, it affects him heavily. So, for somebody who's, of course, had the experience of their mom dying,
mm-hmm.
to go watch Thor get a chance to talk to his dead mom again
mm-hmm.
for a few moments, yeah, that'll get you teary.
I can get it.
And then the moment that I think I finally lost it in the final battle, Avengers Assemble.
Right.
But, I was talking about the Bro Thor. When Bro Thor powers up, because he was in Asgard, so he got Mjolnir, which is how it's at the final battle, mm-hmm. and he has Stormbreaker. He calls both of them to them. He does the full power-up God thing like he does in the first Thor movie where he gets his armor and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't slim down. He's still Bro Thor with the armor. So he's got the fat belly. He's got the gigantic beard, but like braids appear in the beard. And so it gets all powered up, but he's still Fat Bro Thor. And so for a fat dude like me, it was like, and they chose to do this specifically. There was question whether they would have him slim up and turn back to, normal buff Thor.
Right.
Or if they'd keep him like that. And it's kind of the journey of the character that he's accepted who he is. He's accepted the fact that he may look different, but he is still Thor. He's mm-hmm. still worthy to hold Mjolnir.
Mm-hmm.
He's still powerful. And even like that, which is just, it's kind of empowering.
Yeah.
It's kind of like he doesn't have to change back to super skinny. Look at me. I'm the superhero.
Right.
He's still awesome.
Cool.
And so that moment was just like, he still gets to be Fat Thor. That's so cool. I have a cosplay outfit. That's so cool.
Yeah, you're going to see, you're probably going to see quite a few Fat Thors in during Halloween this year.
Hell,
for sure. That's one of those. That's like, you're going to see as many Fat Thors as you saw Harley Quinns last year.
Possibly.
Or year before. I can't remember when Suicide Squad came out. I was like 2 years old now.
I will say I'm very happy with Disney right now because of the last couple of movies that they put out. Mm-hmm. They've given me two costumes that I can have for Halloween, finally, after all these years.
Wait, and are you talking like Lebowski Thor as well, or?
Well, technically, I have multiple costumes with Thor because I bought a sweatshirt that's the nano suit, the quantum suit that they wear.
Oh,
the
cool.
Red and black quantum suit.
Mm-hmm.
So if I put that sweatshirt on over like some gray with some gray sweatpants,
mm-hmm.
I could totally pull off Thor for that moment in the movie.
Cool.
And then I could possibly get the Thor costume to be able to pull off that because I got the beard.
Yeah,
I got the belly. I'm about 8 inches too short, but still,
yeah,
I can pull those parts of it off. But no, 2 years ago they came out with the Star Wars movie, the Last Jedi, and the upside is Mark Hamill's not very tall. I could totally pull off old Luke.
Okay,
I could totally pull off old Luke. I
okay.
got the beard.
Yeah,
I got. All I need is some Jedi robes and a glove for my hand.
A yeah.
black glove for my hand, and I could right. totally pull off old Luke. When I saw it, that was another one. When I saw it, I was like, oh, Halloween and cosplay. I could totally pull it. Wait a minute. I finally look like Luke Skywalker. Yes. So awesome.
All right. I can see it. That's cool.
Although I do have, you know what a union suit is, right?
No.
They're like they're similar to like zip-up pajamas, but they got like they're made into a costume.
Oh, cool.
You know what I'm talking about? Have you
mm-hmm.
seen those?
Mm-hmm.
I actually have one that's a Darth Vader costume.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a full zip-up union suit.
Nice.
Darth Vader.
Cool.
I have multiple masks, and I have about, I think in my lightsaber collection, I have 4 Darth Vader lightsabers. So.
Legit?
Another possibility. Although, fat Darth Vader is not nearly as compelling as Bro Thor or Old Man Luke. But anyway. All right, so
sorry. The image of Fat Vader just
well, especially you know, it's
is comic. Like you know
that
happens at every con. Like 5 of those are at every con.
Didn't
I'm
I send
sure.
you send you a picture of that though? Me in that union suit. I thought
no,
I did.
No,
I have it on my phone. I will show you later.
Yes, please.
And I may post it onto the Facebook page.
That's fantastic.
And Twitter. Yeah, it'll be me in the Vader onesie. And yes, it's a little tight, so it's a little revealing. But that's all right.
Okay.
I guess I like it that way.
Yeah. Oh boy.
But anyway, that's our conversation for the day. It was an interesting one. We touched on some interesting topics, didn't we?
Yeah.
Some philosophical stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm cutting us short because we're actually within a decent time frame this time.
I know.
So we're gonna have something that's actually listenable to instead of super long. Which
I
is
like
good.
That.
Which is
I
good.
Like that.
So I again, as we always try to ask people to comment in, I'd love to hear some comments about some because in the beginning we talked about my strange habits with my cups and my necessity to have my own cups, my own bowls, my own plates. What strange habits like that do you have? What things are do you have
yeah.
that are kind of your things that nobody else is allowed to touch?
Yeah.
I'm interested in that. I mean, I know we had a discussion, you and I once, about the fact that if I ever won the lottery, I don't know if this ever made it to a podcast, but if I ever won the lottery, I would, one of the things I would make sure to do is have my own toilet with my name on it and like a thumbprint scanner so that nobody else could ever use my toilet. It would be just mine.
I think I remember
because that falls into my possessiveness.
I think that was in the like one of the early podcasts.
I think so,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that type of thing. If there's anything that you're possessive over like that, any item that's like necessary to you to use every day, please put it in some comments. Let us know. Also, how do you relate to your parents? How do you relate to some of the older people
yeah.
in your life? Is there a thing like football that like I use with my dad or like I've used with other people of that older generation to relate mm-hmm. to? What kinds of things do you use? It'd be interesting to hear
yeah.
Some other people's ideas. So, Mike. If people want to listen to us, where do they find us?
Well, check us out at thezennialchronicles.com, or if you don't want to type that much, zencron.com. You can check.
I think you should keep that in.
Okay, fine.
With the word lap,
boy,
too,
that's
keep that in.
Lap.
La, 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 la. Dead air.
Okay. All right, we're going to try this again. You can check us out at thezennials.com. This is too much, man.
No, keep it.
I haven't had enough coffee this morning. Okay. The ZenEelChronicles.com is where you can see us.
Yes.
ZenCron.com, if you don't want to type that much. Speaking of ZenCron, you could follow us at ZenCron on Facebook and on Twitter.
Yes.
If you want to hear us in our podcast in any one of the apps that you're using, we are on Google Podcast. We are on Google Podcast.
There we go.
We're on TuneIn.
Yes.
We are on
Spotify.
Spotify. Thank you. There's always that third one I miss. And also, if you want us on Apple Podcast, what you need to do is open your Apple Podcast app and subscribe to us using this URL, thezenielchronicles.com/feed/podcast. And it will pop up in your subscription feed, and you can check us out from Apple Podcast.
Nice. Yeah. And of course, as always, you can check out this podcast and all of our other podcasts on YouTube.
Yes. Our entire archive of podcasts is on our YouTube channel.
There's even one or two little videos.
Us on YouTube for now, but here's the deal. If you or anybody else that you know would be into just checking us out on YouTube, or if you're checking out this podcast right now, go subscribe to our YouTube channel. Make sure you hit the bell icon so that you get notified when we put a new video up. We are trying to get ourselves to 100 subscribers.
Yes, 100 is good.
Yes. At that point, we can get ourselves a custom URL, and we could pitch youtube.com/whatever that's going to be. Chances are you'll probably guess what it is at this point, but we don't know until we can get it. So please subscribe to our YouTube channel if you're listening to this.
Please do. Please do. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.